What's going on, Meat Mafia? Welcome back to another episode of the Meat Mafia podcast. Before we get rolling here today, we want to give a quick shout out to you, the listener. We are so thankful to have you on board with the Meat Mafia, and we cannot thank you enough for your endless support. Without you guys, we are nothing. So thank you so much for your comments, feedback, likes, subscribes, listens, everything. It means the world to us. With that being said, please go to your podcast medium's platform, give us a 5-star review. If it's not 5 stars, maybe don't give us a review. Subscribe, do the whole thing. We really appreciate that. And also, please go check out some of the links below. We have some great sponsors and they are killing it in the world of food and providing great high quality food for people just like yourself. Quickly outlining our sponsors, we have Holy Cow Beef, Rick Ranches, Equip Foods, and The Carnivore Bar. These are all great products. If you want to learn more, go check out the links below. Without further ado, here's a word from our sponsors. Holy Cow Beef is a regenerative farm based out of Lubbock, Texas, with humanely raised, grass-fed, grass-finished beef available for sale and shipment. Companies like ButcherBox source from outside of the US and Australia and don't specifically have the American Grass-Fed Association, or AGA, label, but Holy Cow does. They also sell chicken and pork in addition to their amazingly high-quality beef raised right here in Texas. Alden and Ann Warren have overcome their own health struggles, and they have inspired us by the way they live their lives and by the way they raise their animals. So go check them out in the link below, and they also accept Bitcoin, so all you Bitcoiners out there, go check out Holy Cow Beef. Also, if you're in Colorado, go check out Rick Ranches, a grass-fed, grass-finished, regenerative farm servicing all over Colorado. He also accepts Bitcoin, so all you Bitcoiners out there, go hit up Rick Ranches and get your beef today. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by The Carnivore Bar. The Carnivore Bar is an animal-based, shelf-stable product with only 3 simple ingredients: beef, tallow, and salt. The bar is inspired by the ancient traditions of Native Americans who needed to create pemmican bars to preserve meat for long-distance travel. The Carnivore Bar is perfect for animal-based athletes or busy people looking to follow a low-carb diet. It's easy to throw in a bag and take with you anywhere you're going, whether it's a workout, hike, or even packing it for a snack at work. I throw them in my triathlon bag and take down a bar immediately after working out. They're a fantastic product, so go check them out and use our discount code in the link below. Danny Vega, welcome to the Meat Mafia podcast. It's a pleasure to have you.
Thank you for having me, fellas. We almost didn't think it was going to happen. It was a month in the making, but I'm happy to be here.
Dude, we're just going to save all the good stuff for the episode. And we were saying before we had the opportunity to connect at KetoCon a little under 2 months ago, and you gave this awesome talk on just community, accountability, how that impacts your health, the role of diet, low carbohydrate performance. It was an awesome talk. And after hearing you speak, Harrison and I were just thinking he would be an awesome guest. So we're pumped to dig into it with you. So we appreciate you coming on, man.
I'm honored, man. Thank you.
Yeah. And we know that you have a really diverse background. You were a high level football player. You played at Columbia. You were a strength and conditioning coach for the VCU men's basketball team. You did a stint in pharmaceutical sales. And then you really started to dig into the low carb carnivore space and are really seen as a leading expert, man. So I think we'd love to just learn a little bit more about your story, your nutritional journey, and how that's kind of led you to the point where you're at today.
Yeah, man, I've always been kind of obsessive with the nutrition side of things. As far as the performance side goes, that's been my main area of expertise. But like, it was interesting because in my studies in grad school and in everything that I did, it was like always kind of lacking on the nutrition side. And it was like, there was always, even with back then, it's not the same as it is now. Now it's a little bit more nuanced, but it was the typical, eat lots of carbs. But even back then, I was like, my first coach that got me in the gym when I was like 14 was an ex-Marine, and he wrote me a diet, and it was like eggs, beef, potatoes, oatmeal, all that stuff. And I was eating real food, and my dad would wake up early and have my food ready for me. Like when I woke up in the morning, high school was obsessive in the gym, and I ended up getting a key to the weight room so I could go train before school was open. And then like when I was in grad school, I promise you, I'd never heard anything about low carb diets. I definitely didn't hear anything about ketogenic diets. And But at the time, I was obsessing about nutrition because I've always wanted to, you know, see what edge I can get performance wise, look good. You know, I'm not going to lie, I always wanted to look good. And in 2003, that's when I first stumbled upon Dr. John Berardi's stuff, Precision Nutrition, which they were really sensible with their approach. And I learned a lot from him. And then kind of nutrition over the years was just, I was always conscious of it and all that, but I really didn't dig deeper until about 2011, when I first started learning about the paleo diet. And, my wife and I got into paleo, and then we learned about Weston A. Price, and we kind of did all of that with our kids. Like my wife, we weaned them both with their first foods that they both ever touched was soft boiled egg yolks and raw liver. And let me tell you, when you see these baby boys like sucking on liver, like licking their fingers because they love it so much, it's pretty intense. It's pretty insane to see like how natural it is. And we always fed them, you know, lots and lots of meat. You know, we would give them some sweet potatoes and all that good stuff. But then I got into powerlifting, and 2013 to about 2017, I was powerlifting and I competed at a high level, and I threw everything of paleo out the window. And I started to do like, just if it fits your macros, and got a little sloppy for a while. And I brought it back, you know, I started to go back to kind of my paleo roots. And it wasn't until I had an injury in 2015 that wasn't diagnosed until 2016 that had me pull out of a meet, that I was like, man, I need to lose some weight. I need to really get a hold of my diet. And I did like a cut. My buddy who helped me with it was a bodybuilder, and it was a typical bodybuilding cut, you know, higher carb, low fat, had me down to like 50 grams of fat at the end of the cut. And I always tell everybody I was really lean and I was really miserable. And, you know, we kept having these cheat weekends, and it got to the point where it's like, man, this, we can't keep doing this. Cause my wife has done everything that I've ever done. We kind of do it together, which is awesome. And I had a buddy who, Trevor kept on telling me, like in the gym, he's like, you should try this keto diet. And I was like, what are you talking about, man? This is ridiculous. What do you mean? No carbs, you know? And finally, when I pulled out of my meet and I was already like really lean, I was like, you know, I don't have anything to lose. You know, I'm already where I need to be. And I started to eat this ketogenic diet. My carbs were already low, so I had to just drop them a little bit more. But I think what made the biggest difference was increasing my fat. And it was literally within 3 to 4 days, I felt like a different person. My joints felt different. I felt more energy. My brain was more on point. My hunger signals were on point. And I'll just say that another interesting little thing when I first started it was over the period of a month, I had to raise my calories like by 1,000 just to stop the hemorrhaging. I was like, I kept on shredding, getting more shredded. I was like, holy crap, I'm good. I learned about carnivore. That was interesting because I was one of the, like, I was an early adopter with carnivore. You know, Brian, my co-host on the Ketogenic Athlete, had, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm forgetting her name now. One of the leading carnivore women, Amber O'Hearn. Amber O'Hearn. He had Amber O'Hearn on his podcast. And then we kind of both were very into it, the whole idea. Especially me, because I was like, I always thought I had to cover my nutritional bases with like veggies and stuff. And I was like, man, you mean I don't need those? So August of 2017, we just did this experiment. We called it August Surf and Turf. And all we had was beef and salmon the whole month. And it was like a huge game changer. And then I basically went full carnivore that August, and I stayed full carnivore for like a year. Then I would, of course, I'm a very experimental guy. So I would do like, I played around with carb ups. I played around with, you know, over the years, a bunch of different things. But for the most part, like I'm basically most of the year meat based. You know, there'll be like probably, you know, 3 pounds of meat that I'll eat in a day, and then maybe there'll be an avocado that sneaks in, or definitely cheese, love cheese. Mm-hmm. But it's just like, for me, it's just the best combination, especially where I am now, of performance at a level that I want to continue. Maybe not the top performance as far as like strength or power goes, but to a point where I keep my strength, definitely easy to maintain muscle. And but what I get that I don't get with any other approach is like the mental clarity, the increased productivity, and it's just like the less variability in my weight. I just kind of look the same all the time. So that's basically my long-winded nutritional journey.
Well, you forgot to mention the most important 12 days, which was the past 12 days.
Oh yeah. You want me to mention that? I think that'll be.
We'd love to dive deep into that. No, we were joking before we hit record that you were experimenting with the vegan diet for a few days. It's a hilarious story, so we'd love to hear it.
Yeah. So, my church said that they were doing the Daniel fast, and I'm always like, yeah, I'd be up for it. What do I have to lose? I've never done it. But always in the past when that's happened, I've always been like, nah, not this time around. I'm not. And this time around, I felt kind of like called to do it, because I'm like, you know what? I'm a rebellious person. Let me check my rebellious attitude. I'm always a going against the grain type of guy. I don't want to like, you know, think and I also viewed it as like a faith thing. I'm like, man, you know, God will sustain me, you know, all that. But that being said, this fast, this Daniel fast, which is basically you eat like a vegan for 21 days. And it's not something that's we're commanded to do, but I in the Bible, but it is something that I was like, you know what, like this could be really good, especially because we're doing this whole thing right now at church where we want to focus on spiritual things, and there's nothing better than a fast, even though, like I told you guys, this is not a fast. Anything that's a fast that has you eating is not a fast, but whatever. So I was like, okay, I'm going to do this. I spent like so much time prepping for it because my life is so simple on a daily basis. It's literally like ground beef, the occasional steak, you know, like some cheese on my ground beef. Mm-hmm. And it was just so much more complicated because I'm like, I want to not have grains, or yeah, basically not have grains, which I didn't, but like I couldn't stay away from legumes, which was how I was going to try to get protein. I had to like take lots of protein, vegan protein shakes, which put it to you this way. Well, I'm not going to blow up her spot, but I lasted 12 days, right? By day four, I was miserable. I basically was eating like the macro ratios of like the type of rat chow that you give to rats to fatten them up. It was like, mm-hmm. maybe like 14% protein, like 30% carbs, and the rest fat. And hungry all the time, tired, especially in the afternoons. What else? My definitely lost my brain, you know, kind of my focus, and gassy, bloated. And actually, I didn't mention this to you guys, but after like 4 days, I started to get back pain. I was like, dude, my back hurts. I'm like, this is a joke from one of these guys, this funny guy that does the whole Hot Pockets thing. He was talking about how bad the food was, that he's like, my back hurts. I'm like, this, I've become a joke. And the good thing was that like my wife, Angel that she is, reminded me that keto bricks are vegan. And so I brought those in for like day five to day 12. And I was having like 2.5 bricks a day to supplement, you know, what I was eating. So I was getting an extra 2,500 calories in keto brick, which was fun, but it was like, there was nothing savory. And if I did have savory, it was like hummus with cucumbers and like, you know, lots of pickles and olives and really low protein foods. And finally, yesterday, I gave in, and I got a bunch of meat at the drive-thru at Wendy's. And I was like, I got home and I told my wife, I was like, I'm done. And I kind of don't regret it, you know, like I feel so much better now and I'm like, okay, life is back to normal. But that was my last 12 days.
Well, it's a good story. It's a great story. And one of the things we talk a lot about on here, and I know you talk about this too, is how the self-experimentation, man, and the willingness to tinker and iterate is so important. And I think particularly like in the keto carnivore community, it's easy to just get married to this particular way of eating because it is convenient and you feel so good. But the fact that you were kind of forced through this fast to get out of your comfort zone and try this like plant-based style of eating, now you definitively know, hey, when I take these foods away and try and eat lentils and beans and vegan protein powders, my energy doesn't feel good. My digestion's off and you don't feel like you're operating at the best level. So I think it's great that you did that and more people should try and do that too.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's kind of like with any idea that you have, your confidence in your position will never be as strong as it would be unless you're able to entertain the other idea. And in this case, like something nutritional, you can't fully entertain it unless you try it. Mm-hmm. You know, I know all the things that a vegan will tell me, oh, you're just detoxing, or, you know, what did you expect? You switched from an all meat diet. It's going to be different. But I'm like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I do think like, I like variety. You know, I definitely go back. Like I could have, like, those lentils would have tasted good with some, if I put some ground beef with them, you know, that might have helped things out a little bit. But it's like, it's not something that I would have ever tried on my own. And I had like salads and stuff, which I hadn't eaten a salad in forever, but it is good to do that, man, for sure.
Have you ever worn like a CGM or done any like wearable stuff during some of this dieting to get some data on these different sorts of dietary experiments that you've put yourself through?
Most of the time I do. Yeah. Like, I've done all types of stuff. Like one of the first things that I did when I was carnivore was, I didn't have a CGM back then, but I was testing blood sugar responses to high protein, because that was back then I had to fight against the high protein thing. Like, people were like, you know, don't eat too much protein, it'll turn into cake, you know, like, and so I remember I started, I was like, okay, I'm going to test blood sugar response to 12 ounces of ground beef. And then I went to 16, and then I went to 20, and then I went to 24. And then when I went to 28, and finally, when I went to 2 pounds in a sitting, I think I had like 16 or 18 point difference in my blood sugar, which is nothing. And it's usually like transitory, you know, like it's something that's going to go away right away. I've done on my carb up days, when I did that for 12 weeks, one summer, it was crazy. Like, I would eat 320 carbs one day and I would wake up the next day in ketosis. Like, wow. It's like my buddy Robert Sykes, he's been strict keto for like 7 years, not one cheat, not one nothing, nothing. And he's a machine. And like, he has this idea that we have lots of ideas that we don't have research for, but a lot of the time they end up bearing themselves out. I'll tell you another one after this, but like, this idea that if you keep going deeper into your fat adaptation, that you keep on benefiting more. And I think that's true. You know, like, after several years of eating this way, my body likes to be in ketosis. My body likes to be burn fat. And so like, having that one carb day, like, my body's like, okay, who cares? Go right back into ketosis, which is really cool. And then the other thing that I would say, which I've done with my bodybuilding clients, is, you know, I used to split test, and we would say, okay, for now, for your refeeds, some of them were more like open and wanting to do carb refeeds. And so I would do that. And then I started to say, well, why don't we test? We'll do a carb refeed this week, and then in the next one, in 2 weeks, we'll do a fat refeed. And we didn't do blood sugar stuff, but what I had them do was take pictures at the end of the day of the refeed, and then the next morning, the morning after the refeed. And because when you start to cut calories over time, you have to do lots of things that are going to keep your hunger hormones in check. You got to do things that are going to keep your metabolism in check. And all of the research on caloric refeeds is on carbohydrates, you know? And so it's well established that a carb refeed will do lots of wondrous things for someone who's on a deficit. But what about a fat refeed? Is it the carbs or is it just the energy? And invariably, with my clients, it is the energy. Like, not only do they get the same benefits that they get with a carb refeed, but they look better the next day, except we add sodium. That's a big thing that we add sodium on our refeeds, anywhere from 500 to 1,000 extra milligrams of sodium, which, you know, we do that, like we kind of do like bench tests. And so by the time peak week comes, we know exactly what to expect. And they don't get, some people would complain about like being, you know, just having like, what do you call it? Cravings, you know, cravings the next day after a carb refeed and making it harder. And so, and then if you look at, interesting, the research that you can see with, like, for example, a cyclic keto approach versus a regular keto approach is, there's a really good study by my friends, Dr. Ryan Lowry and Dr. Jacob Wilson. They put, these guys were well-trained guys. They weren't beginners. They put them both groups in a deficit, college-age bodybuilders. And, they actually, you know, the standard ketogenic group. And by the way, the cyclic keto were doing 2 days. So like a weekend of carbs, which it would be nice to see what about one carb meal? What about one carb day? That would be the next thing that we would want to see. But they found that both groups were put in this deficit. They lost the same amount of body weight, but the cyclic keto group actually lost more lean mass. And, it took them longer to get back into ketosis. So like Monday, Tuesday, you feel like trash in the gym. So you have like this like sputtering of your engine. And that kind of shows how muscle sparing and protein sparing ketogenic diets are, because you knock yourself out of ketosis, you're not getting those same benefits that the strict keto group got. So I've always done lots of stuff. We've done like 500 calories extra a day coming from protein versus carbs, protein versus fat versus protein and fat. And we found that the best combination with our breath ketones, our blood sugar, and our blood ketones was the combination of protein and fat.
Mm. Does it drive you crazy when you hear the myths and rumors that you can't put on the same level of mass and muscle eating keto or carnivore as you could incorporating carbohydrates?
Well, I'll say, man, like it's definitely annoying because, but I will say that if you want to get like Dorian Yates, you know, you're going to need carbs, but there's also insulin involved. You know, there's lots of massive amounts of drugs and stuff like that, which, you know, anybody who wants to try that and take that amount of drugs and do that, go ahead and try. But like, you know, it is interesting that like it's keto's only for cutting. And, you know, keto can be, I've put on lots of muscle in times when I wasn't even trying to put on muscle. And now I'm focused on building muscle and I'm starting to see that I'm older than I've been. I'm 41 now. And, I can't handle the same amount of volume and punishing training, but I feel good. I feel strong. But if you look at the research, even with that, there's the only research that you see is in cultures. And so like there's, it's a fact that carbohydrates do not increase muscle. Carbohydrates on their own do not increase muscle. Protein, because of leucine, does cause hypertrophy, it is anabolic, but a combination of protein with carbs is more anabolic than just protein, because you have a more pronounced mTOR signal because of the insulin. But I always tell people, you know, think about it this way. Insulin is not selectively anabolic in muscle cells. It's anabolic in muscle cells and fat cells, you know? So I would argue, especially with someone who's of an experience, because the more experienced you are, the more of a difference you'll see between just a ketogenic way with high protein versus carbs. Because like beginners, it's easier for them to put on muscle no matter what they do, if they're just eating enough protein. But if you're the type of guy who's used to like doing that spring bulk, you know, where you gain like 15, 20 pounds in 3 months and you do it a ketogenic way and you only gain 10 pounds, there's definitely research to show that muscle thickness is better. So the quality of weight that you put on is better. And I see that all the time I've seen it with myself on a cut, and I saw it with one of my clients. She lost over a period of, what was it? About 4 months. She lost 13 pounds. Okay. And she cut her body fat from 26% to 10%. And she only lost 13 pounds.
That's crazy.
And that's absurd. Like she was in a deficit. She put on 7 pounds of lean mass. And I can tell you that I've gone through that where I went from 231 to 217. So I lost 14 pounds. Yeah, 14 pounds. And I went from 12% on a DEXA scan to 6%. And I also gained like 6 pounds of lean mass, which would have been probably like I gained a pound of muscle, of actual skeletal muscle, in a period of 4 or 5 months in a deficit. That's absurd. Wow. You know, that's so, yeah, I just like, look, if you want to be a massive pro bodybuilder, there's going to be a way to do things. The only support that you're going to get at a high level, like with the top coaches, is going to only be with carbs. But you have everything else. Like I can tell you that I did have more energy when I was doing my carb up research, like my personal experiments, but over a period of 12 weeks, my inflammation went up like a little bit every week, to the point where like it was one of my shoulders every week. It was like nagging me. And then it got to the point where it didn't matter if I had more strength, I hurt more, you know. Mm-hmm. What happens? How hard is it to do? Like for me, it's super easy to be in a deficit on a ketogenic approach, and my clients as well. It's much more painful to do it with an approach that lowers fat and has more carbs. So I just think with my audience now that has kind of like, it's kind of in my age range where it's like 35 to let's say 65. I would say that the percentage of people that would benefit from a higher carb approach is minimal. You know, like they're going to just feel so much better. They're going to perform better if they're like an entrepreneur or, you know, an executive level person where they're like, they're on point all day. They don't exactly have time to eat 4 or 5 meals a day. You know, they can just get a big breakfast, train, get like either a big dinner or maybe like a light lunch and a big dinner, and they're going to look great. Their hormones are going to thank them. They're going to have less inflammation overall. So yeah, but it does, you know, it used to be that people were like, well, yeah, you can put on muscle with keto. Look at Danny Vega. And I was like, well, that's not enough. We need more than that. You know, we need to have, we need to show, well, why is that? Why is it that I have been able to keep my muscle? And that's something that I've explored over the years, which is like, you have to match your training to your diet. You know, you definitely want to keep your rest periods longer. You want to focus on like a myofibrillar type of hypertrophy versus sarcoplasmic, which is just like myofibrillar. You want to train heavier. You want to live in that 6 to 8 rep range, and you want to dip your toes into that, like, you know, that higher rep range with lower rest periods for a short period of time, versus a bodybuilder, which is living in that sarcoplasmic type of hypertrophy, which, to be honest, I prefer myofibrillar anyways, because that type of hypertrophy, that type of the training, if you look over time, your strength curve is much more in line with your hypertrophy. Whereas if you're sarcoplasmic, you'll get strength to a point, but then you'll plateau in strength and you'll continue to get bigger. So it's that whole like Ferrari with the Volvo, you know, or Volkswagen engine. Mm-hmm. But that being said, there's also something to be said about like not training too heavy, even though there's a sweet spot where you get the benefits to your bones and your connective tissue versus like training too heavy. And now you're a beat up old man, you know, when you're older.
Mm. What, so the health and fitness industry is notorious for all sorts of misconceptions. what are some that rub you the wrong way that you've come across over your decades focusing on nutrition and health?
You know, like, I feel like they've all been, they've all been debunked by now, and I'm really happy. Like, one of the ones that I see a lot more, and I know this just because I speak to people in the bodybuilding industry who may not follow keto, but the whole like complete phobia of fat, you know, that was a big deal. Like eating nutritionally devoid diets, like just focusing on like tilapia and brown rice and broccoli and chicken breasts, where it's just, yeah, you're getting the amino acids, you're getting the macros, but are you getting the micros? You got to get out of here. I got my son's playing hide and go seek in the, you got to get out of here. You cannot be in here. Go out here. I can't believe this. Sorry, guys. So he's just like, he doesn't know that I'm on a podcast. So
he's hyped up on too much beef liver. Right.
Yeah. Okay. You got to get out of here, bro. Get out. Freaking, he's my little hemorrhoid. I love him. Close the door, Dean. Dean, close the door.
He's the only person with the guts to mess with Danny Vega.
Yeah. He really is. Not even his older brother has the guts to do that, dude. So fat, I see people eating more red meat. Which is awesome, and they're definitely benefiting from it. Other than that, like, I think the anabolic window is one that, like, I can tell you I have just scoured like everywhere for research on this. Like, where did this come from? And I can tell you, like, just the easiest kind of Occam's razor answer is it's a supplement ploy, you know, like that you gotta get something 30 minutes within. And I can tell you, because I mentioned Dr. Jacob Wilson, I asked him about this because he's really good with the research. He does research. He, you know, he knows research. And he shared one article that over the last 20 years that covered, because I found several articles that basically punt on this subject, like this anabolic window. What, how long is it? Is it important? And all of them are like, basically, well, we know that amino acids are very important after training. We know that, right? But what is the time frame? You know, no one's comfortable enough, and they shouldn't be as scientists, because they haven't been able to establish a window. And what this one study did was they basically grouped it into like three levels of training. Like, you have your beginner would be pretty safe waiting 12 hours post-training until they had, you know, amino acids for to rebuild. And then you have your mid-level group that is basically, that gets down to about 6 hours. And then you have like elite athletes, which is like 4 hours post-training. Mm-hmm. And so I'm conservatively with my clients and myself, which I usually don't wait that long, because by the time I'm done training, I'm probably hungry within an hour and I'm eating within an hour. But I always say try to get food within 4 hours. Also, because with the ketogenic side of things, which is a lot of misconceptions here, is people just love to like move their intermittent fasting windows longer. Like, they see some success with that with on the fat burning side, and they train at 6 a.m. and they don't eat until 6 p.m. And that, I think, could be pretty disastrous, like to your lean body mass. And so I tell them, look, move your fast window earlier. You know, like, if you really want to do that, you want to fast 20 hours, then if you're training at 7, eat your first meal at like, you know, no later than 11. And, you know, then you got from 11 to 3, and fine, you're going to train fasted, you know. And even then, like, the training fasted thing, I think, is something that I can do it, because I train early in the morning now. But if I didn't, I would, and I'm actually going into this 12-week thing that I told you guys, where I'm going to be waking up and in about like an hour and a half worth, later after waking up, having some UCAN, super starch before training. The only other thing, there was one more that I thought was, important to note. I think I lost it, dude. But yeah, there's lots of things that over time I think have been kind of debunked. But just like, it was the timing of the protein. So you know, you can absorb all the protein that you eat, even if it's high protein. If you weren't able to do that, like, we wouldn't survive as a species. So you will absorb it. The question is, like, how optimal will muscle protein synthesis be, you know? And I got to give a shout out to Dr. Gabrielle Lyons, because she's been really harping on this for the last several months. Is like, I don't know if I quite agree with, like, being so fervent with it, saying that, like, I need to. She does talk about the leucine threshold, which is important. That's super important. At the very least, you have to have this much amount. Let's say put 30 grams of protein. I just don't think that you need to have four meals of 30 grams where you can get away with three meals of 40 grams or something like that. But that being said, if you're a bodybuilder and you're trying to put on muscle, and it's not too much of an inconvenience, there's no, let's say you're someone my size, you got to get 200 to 250 grams of protein a day. There's no risk in eating four meals. I think, like, when I'm trying to get lots of calories and I want to focus on bodybuilding, I will eat four meals. Like, but most of the time I'm eating two to three meals, usually three.
Yeah. Are you big at trying to just make sure that you're cooking as many meals as you possibly can?
Oh yeah, man. We don't eat out. Like,
yeah.
I'm super stubborn. Like, I go to a place and, like, they're charging me $60 for a 20-ounce steak. I'm like, dude, I can make four of these at home. Like, so what we do definitely, which I was just there, I went to a Brazilian steakhouse twice in the last month. I went on date night like 2 weeks ago. I'm like the mayor at my Brazilian steakhouse. Yeah. Like, I go in there, they make the chicken hearts for me. They, you know, they bring me my lamb. They love me. And I'm actually, we have friends in town that we're taking them there tomorrow. So the Brazilian steakhouse, I do that because, like, I'll pay $45 and I'll make them lose money because I'm going to eat everything. But for the most part, dude, like, it's literally every day. Like I said, it's, I cook my ground beef. I know what I'm seasoning it with, you know, like, I cook my steaks and it's really not complicated. I don't have to do food prep. Like, my food prep is taking the meat out to defrost.
Mm. Yeah.
Awesome.
What about, like, sourcing your meals? Do you go directly to a farm, grocery store? I mean, you're feeding a family, so I'm sure that's a challenging endeavor, but
I love this question. Like, I love this question, especially because you got a lot of people on budgets, and I always tell people, I don't know where I heard it, but I totally agree with it. I tell, as far as what I tell people to do is eat the meat you can afford and that you love to eat. You know, you don't have to eat liver. If you don't want to eat liver, do some optimal carnivore, right? Right, guys?
Yep. Oh yeah.
or, you know, if you do, I put the liver into grind it into burgers like I do. But for the most part, like, if you're talking from a health standpoint, what are we focusing on with health? Is it the omega-3 content? If it's the omega-3 content, there's no difference. And the reason why is, like, ground beef in general is going to be like less than 10% polyunsaturated fats, right? So if you have a 30% increase in omega-3s from a grass-finished steer, that's only 30% higher of 9% of the meat. So let's put that aside. Now, if you're talking about what is the cow being fed, is it like glyphosate, you know, treated grass? I'm not a fan of that. And, like, it doesn't have to be organic, which organic would limit that, obviously. But you'd be surprised. Like, you call your local guy, which I got my local guy. He doesn't have the organic label, but he's more organic than anybody that I know. He totally just doesn't pay the mafia for that, you know, you know, the government mafia. And so I have a mix, man. Like, I, there's only one place that I can find, with the exception of one of the people that I order from, Chuck Eyes. So if I find Chuck Eyes, like, at a supermarket, I'm freaking buying a bunch of Chuck Eyes, but I get a lot of bison from, Central Nebraska buffalo, which is amazing. I really like Wild Pastures now, and Wild Pastures, the reason why I like them and we're going to start promoting them is that they're grass finished, but because of their structure, they basically they, let's say you're in the Southeast region, they have the ranchers that they're working with are all in that region. So they save a ton of money on shipping. And so it's actually grass finished beef that you can afford, wow. Which way cheaper than anybody else. Cause I love, you know, there's a bunch of like, what is the, gosh, we just worked with them.
White Oak Pastures.
White Oak Pastures is amazing, but we worked with Regenerative Pastures for several months, which is awesome. But some of these companies they can be too expensive for people, man. You know, like, and that's a fact. And I always tell people, like, your $3, your $3.99 tube of you know, conventionally raised beef from Walmart is gonna be 10 times better than organic quinoa. So buy the freaking tube of Walmart meat if you can afford it. It also helps. It helps a lot, you know, because it puts us above reproach, which is another reason why there's other companies that I used to promote that are bringing their beef in from overseas. And then because of country of origin labeling laws,
yes,
they can label it a product of the U.S. because it was inspected here. Now, to me, and then they're still charging a premium and they're bringing it from overseas because they're getting a big price break. Yep. That's a problem from an ethical standpoint, but it's even more of a problem. Not so much anymore, because in the last couple of years, we haven't had these massive like vegan battles that we used to have. Like, we have other things that we've been arguing about the last couple of years. But I stopped working with one of these companies because I was like, you know what? Like, how am I going to tell a vegan that it's ridiculous that you think you're saving the environment when you're flying in all these out of season produce so that you can eat your fake diet? And then I'm having stuff flown in from overseas, you know, totally. Like that's not going to work, you know?
Yeah. There are a couple big meat delivery services where we know for a fact that they're getting their shit from Argentina, Mexico, Brazil. Yep. And like you said, because of the COOL Act, they can just say that it's US raised beef. That's something Whole Foods does too. One of our good buddies, Jason Rick, is a regenerative rancher out of Colorado. And he said that his buddy at one point was Whole Foods' biggest grass-fed, grass-finished rancher. And within like 2 months of the COOL Act being released in the U.S., they had called the guy up and said, hey, we found another rancher overseas that's like a 50% discount compared to the meat that you have. So, you know, if you can't lower your price, then we can't work with you. So the guy obviously like politely told him to go F themselves. But yeah. Like to your point, though, it's important to, you know, support the systems that you believe in. But at the same time, if you could only afford the $3.99 ground beef from Walmart, it's probably getting touched by a big packer, but it's still so much better for you than the shit that's in the inner aisle of the grocery store. So we totally agree.
Yeah, man. Yeah, man.
So you mentioned the Chuck Eyes, a lot of ground beef. Do you like bone broth or anything else like that for gut health or anything like that?
Absolutely. I don't even know if I do it for gut health. I freaking like, my favorite thing is to get like several pounds, 5 to 10 pounds of canoe bones, roast them, eat all of the marrow that my kids let me eat because I have to fight my kids off of the marrow. And then throw that into a broth. And we've had periods of time when we got broths going for weeks, like, you know, just keep on drawing from it. You can usually, with some good bones, you can usually get like three decent kind of batches of broth that are high in gelatin and collagen. And I absolutely love that. Like, actually, my favorite thing on Friday that you guys saw me snacking on before we came on is like, I didn't do, we didn't make a broth this time, but we just take beef stock and I take like 6 pounds of stew meat. And I brown it for, you know, I just saute it and sear it, you know, for like 2-3 minutes aside. And then I just put it in the big stock pot and just with some onions and garlic and salt and pepper and have a big bowl of you know, basically a stew, a beef stew, which is just, you have it today, you have it tomorrow, and it's delicious, dude. Like, that's one of our favorite things to do on Fridays.
Oh, you're speaking my language. I love the Dutch oven is the best way to cook.
Oh, like, dude, yes, yeah. Just
throw it in and you have meals.
That's what it's in.
Yeah.
Except it's in that I usually, the Dutch oven is something for something smaller, but yeah. This one is like, it's like this big. It's massive. Like I can put like way more, and I don't have to worry about it like when I'm like bubbling over, you know, because it's so much bigger. So yeah, but absolutely love the Dutch oven.
Are you big into vegetables at all? Or are you, do you basically just stick to mostly meat at this point?
The only time that I eat a vegetable is if I like it. And I'm just cracking up because Anthony Chaffee was staying at my hotel, and you know, we would just hang out at the bar like at night. And one of the nights I was telling him that like I had just done 3 months of strict carnivore, and I took like 100 people through this like free challenge that I did. And it was like the first month it was like, you know, meat and dairy. The second month it was like we cut out the dairy, and then the third month we cut out the coffee. So it was just beef. And I was like, but you know, I want to go back to keto, you know, because I just love my freaking cabbage that my sauteed cabbage that I make, because I love cabbage, because I make it with like Asian, like I put like everything but the bagel seasoning and coconut aminos. And he's like, oh yeah, you know, the cabbage, it's the cabbage calling you back. Go back to the cabbage. You know, like, and it's true. Like, it's like, what's this guy's obsession with cabbage? But I really do. I love cabbage. I can't stand broccoli. But like, it's like, if it's one of those rare occasions that I'm eating out and I feel terrible already about spending $60 on my steak, you know, and the steak comes with broccolini or something, I'm going to eat the broccolini. But like, as far as like, I have, and this goes for my children too, like I have completely liberated myself from the misconception. And like, I have some sort of deficiency that vegetables is going to cure. I will say that like vegetables and certain plant foods could be used as definitely as medicinally, you know, like you have your alliums, like your onion and your garlic, and certain foods like that can be good for healing. But other than that, it's kind of like when a dog eats some grass, you know, the dog eats some grass, cleans out their gut a little bit, goes back to eating their typical diet. That's kind of how I look at it.
Yeah. We've said to people too, that like are going carnivore or keto for the first time. It's like, you have to realize that like what you've been taught for what a healthy plate is supposed to look like, it's like decades upon decades of societal programming that's been imprinted into your brain that you just have to overcome. And it's like, I don't see carnivores that are like dying of scurvy or gout or anything like that. It's like if you could just get them to try this for like a week, 2 weeks, just cook all your meals, eat a pound of protein per body weight, cook with tallow, lard, fat, and like just see how they feel. I mean, I would say out of 9 out of every 10 people, if not higher than that, they feel better. Their skin clears up, their energy gets better, their depression goes away. So you want to try to encourage that, but there's just been so much misinformation that's been taught to us for 50 plus years.
Yeah. And then like, I'll see like on social media, I'll see like, you know, posts by people hating on keto or hating on carnivore. And then like, you'll see all the comments, and it's like some, like all of them will be people who will say, yeah, that's ridiculous. That sucks. It's so stupid. And then there's like that sprinkle of a few that said, I tried it for 3 days and I felt terrible, or like some people just talking trash about it, but who have never tried it. And like, that's what I can't stand. Like if there's one thing that I cannot stand, like how it's like you're commenting, you're doing a book report and you haven't read the book, you know, that's kind of how I see it.
Yeah. Totally. Maybe switching gears here a little bit. I know you talk a lot about, on your podcast, kind of mindset and sort of these types of like pillars of like a healthy life. And I think like mindset is kind of foundational to nutrition and fitness. So could you walk us through kind of how you've built your mindset over the years to becoming a strong person and someone who's really just a strong, healthy individual?
Yeah, man. Gosh, it's been such a crazy journey. Like what I'll say that there's so many times when I've thought that I figured it out, and I'll just have anybody who thinks that they got the mindset thing figured out be very wary, you know, because that's usually what got me into trouble, where like I had a blind spot or my pride took over. But as far as mindset goes, the simple there's two simple things that I think everybody should really start to practice and figure out how to do. Number one is delay gratification. That is 100% something that everyone needs to be able to do. And number two is learn how to keep your word to yourself, and be honest with yourself, which is related. So, you know, it starts with being mindful, you know, because if you're just going through life, we have so many things. You mentioned it, like that things that are like years of programming, things that are just like, and habits that we don't even know are habits, you know. And that's the first thing, is we got to like get a feel for like, what's your landscape look like, man? Like, what are you doing the first thing when you wake up in the morning? Can you tell me? And if you can't concretely tell me, that means there's no intention there, which means it's changing all the time. Or it's like you kind of know what you do. You wake up every morning and you look at your phone, or, you know, things like that. Or you do the same thing at night. And usually a lot of the time of what people are trying to calm down with is things that are completely against calming down and relaxing. So how do you, first of all, how do you delay gratification? You have to train it like anything else. You know, anybody who's disciplined, I always say this, they were never born disciplined. You're just not born that way. You know, there's no one, it's kind of like saying like, oh, someone is righteous. You know, your righteousness is not something that you are. It's like, oh, you know, Johnny's so righteous, he was just born a righteous. That's not how that works. You know, all of this stuff is practiced. So, you know, start with saying, you know, whether it be alcohol, sweets, you know, porn, just freaking stop right away. You know, you need to get rid of that right away. But like, there's no weaning off of that. But like, food is something that it has to be in your life. You can't abstain from food. And so like, start with saying, you know what, I'm going to eat for 6.5 days a week. I'm going to follow this plan, and I'm going to define what this plan looks like. The plan doesn't have to be a set of macros and an exact set of foods, but some non-negotiables, like I'm not going to eat bread, I'm not going to eat, you know, seed oils, I'm not going to have food dyes. And it turns out that that happens to be just eating real food, because most of the packaged crap is going to have grains, seed oils, and food dyes. And then like saying to yourself, you know what, I'm going to give myself Friday night is my indulgence meal, you know, and I'm going to indulge in a meal. And and learning how to delay gratification, and then being like, over time, what you should probably, what you'll probably see, especially if you have a big goal, is that the payoff of that one indulgence meal is not what you thought it was going to be. And a lot of it is this weird thing that we have in our head. It's kind of like, you know, like you pick up that bag of Oreos and you get the dopamine from getting it, the hunting of the Oreos in the aisle, you know. But then you get the Oreos, and then especially if you're cleaning yourself up, you're going to feel like crap. So that's the first thing. Now, the same thing goes with keeping your word to yourself. I learned this from Tom Shea. One of the easiest ways to learn your internal dialogue, like what you tell yourself when things are not easy, and learn more about yourself, is do something like this 3-week challenge, that it's the 5, 10, 15 challenge. Basically, the first week, you're going to wake up. First thing you do in the morning, it's got to be first thing you do in the morning and last thing before you go to bed. It's not, you know, after breakfast or after dinner. It's got to be first and last, because it's literally the first thing you do. And I tell people, I had people do this. I've had people do this. I think, Brett, I think I mentioned this in the talk.
You did. You did. Yeah.
So like, you know, you can just put like a sign right by your nightstand, you know, do your 5 push-ups, 5 squats, and 5 sit-ups. And that'll be the first thing you see when you get out of bed, you get it done. And that'll be the last thing you see before you go to bed, you get it done. It goes to 10, 10, 10 the next second week, and it goes to 15, 15, 15, which is literally just, you're doing 30, at the end of the last week, you're doing 30 push-ups, 30 squats, and 30 sit-ups per day. It's nothing crazy, right? It is impossible to do. Like, it took Tom Shea, a Navy SEAL, you know, just certified badass. It took him months to get it done. And, but then it teaches you, what is that internal dialogue saying? Oh, I forgot. Oh, this sucks. You know, that's another one. This is so stupid. Why are we doing, why am I doing this? Or the last one is, of course, like, well, the weather, you know, like I was going to do it, but my dog ate my homework, you know, like it, there was a cloud in the sky, you know, I pulled my, you know, I don't know. I pulled my jaw muscle, whatever. Like, so you have to do those things. And then you always have to seek areas in your life where there's a little bit of give and apply some extra pressure, you know? Yes. And if you're just living mindfully and just saying, okay, you know what, man, like I'm really good with my morning routine, but my evening routine could use some work, and just habit stack, you know? And the only other thing is, like, you notice everything that I said has not been read 500 books, you know, it's because there's people that are just stuck. And I've been that guy. That's another thing. I've been that guy. Like, oh my gosh, this is so good. This is so good. It's way too much. It's way too much. It's way too complicated. Freaking keep it simple, you know, and stay in action. Action increases your confidence. Action and shut up. That's one that like I had to learn. Like, I have my current thing on my phone is it's a Lao Tzu quote: "Silence is a source of great strength." Like, just shut up. You don't have to tell everybody. You don't have to, you know, announce everything that you do. You don't have to tell anybody. Just do it. You know, and that has been, that's where I'm at now. But it is, it's a lifelong pursuit. But I can tell you guys, like, it is freaking, I get goosebumps. It's so worth it. It's so worth it, because, like, if you are focused on growth, you're humble enough to know that you're not where you need to be, but you're confident enough to know that you're capable, fully capable of getting what needs to be done, getting it done.
Yeah. And being willing to keep going back and grow. I know something that you talked about that we had connected over was how you would use a 75 hard challenge as a way to get out of just I think it was like a mental rut that you were in, the way that you described it. And I connected with that because I was in a mental rut in 2020, and that I did 75 hard as well. And that broke me out of it. So, dude, I think we'd love to learn a little bit more about what the 75 hard challenge is and why was it so impactful for you at that point in your life?
Oh, dude, I don't know what my wife was just doing. She was like in this like crouch asking me what I'm doing. I told her I had a podcast, but yeah, it's just funny. So, dude, I went through a depression for the first time ever. And like it probably started in August of 2020. And I know I can pinpoint what the big parts of that were. Like, you know, I spent a year trying to build this business of like fitness themed retreats. We had like 100 people go to Tulum, Mexico during the middle of a pandemic. And I started to see what was coming down the pike. Like, and this was before even like this required shot thing was happening. Like, this was literally just, I'm going to have to tell people that to travel, they're going to need to get tested. And I'm not cool with that. I'm not going to sell that. So I had to fold that up. And that kind of like contributed a lot, because it was like, man, I just wasted a year of my time working so hard on this. But I basically can pinpoint it to starting at about August. And I noticed in December. And then in December, when I noticed, I was like, I'm depressed. Okay, awesome. Now what do I do? Because I realized that doesn't change anything. I still don't want to wake up. I still was not, like, I used to wake up at 4:30. I was either waking up at 6:30, like kind of, which is when I wake up, or just whenever I want, and not planning my days, not doing all. I'm like, why am I not doing all the things that I used to do? And then doing all these things that I never used to do. And one of the things, it started off with, I said, you know what? I'm turning 40 this year. I'm going to walk 40 miles. And so I walked 40 miles for my 40th birthday. And it was not this crazy thing. It was just, it was 40 miles in a day, but you know, I got it done. And I was like, man, that's awesome. I got that done. I did 40 miles in a day. It was walking, but it took me 12 hours, but I did it. And then I think April, May, maybe like March, April, May, sometime around then, like there was a group of people doing 75 hard, and I had seen it, and I just never looked into exactly what it was, but it was exactly what I needed. I was like, this is perfect for me. This is a mindset boot camp, you know? And it's basically 75 days of very simple tasks. Read 10 pages a day, follow a diet, whatever diet you choose, no cheating, no alcohol, drink a gallon of water a day, work out twice a day, 45 minutes, and one of them has to be outside, and take a daily progress pic. You don't have to share that, but you got to do it. And if you miss any of these, you got to go back to day one. And then it was like, trial by fire. It was like the motivation to not go back to day one was like, well, I guess I got to walk at 11 o'clock at night. I guess I got to, you know, go out there and train in the rain today. I guess I got to go, you know, read my 10 pages and not completely not retain anything because I'm falling asleep because I'm so tired. And it was like all these things over and over and over. And I finished it and it was like, wow, that was amazing. And then there's actually four phases. So then after 75 hard, you do phase one. You got to wait at least 30 days. And that one is a 30-day sprint where you add to all those things. All you do is you add 10 minutes of visualization and take a 5-minute cold shower. And I think the 10 minutes of visualization, those two. Did that for 30 days. Another 30-day rest. Go back, do 75 hard for 30 days, like just the tip, the original one. So it's like, let's brush up. Let's do this again. And then wait another 30 days. That was phase two. Phase three. I forgot what it was. It added the things again. And then phase four was meet somebody new every day and do a random act of kindness every day. And that was like, I had to get creative with that. I had to be like, okay, I'm going to call this person today and I'm going to tell them, or I'm going to offer a free consult to someone, or I'm going to buy someone's coffee or something like that. And my breakthrough was actually in November. So almost a year after realizing that I was depressed, but if you look back, it wasn't an overnight thing. It was like, it was all these things that I did along the way and all these areas that I still, even after I was like, okay, I'm myself again, but I'm not where I need to be with my work side of life. You know, like I need to work on my marriage a little bit. Like I haven't been the husband that I should be. So, the 75 hard, I recommend it to anybody, man. Honestly, it is, you know, it could be, I've had clients who, you know, beat alcoholism in 75 hard, you know, like this is a lot of things that can come out of something like that.
Wow. Yeah. It's a powerful proposition and ethos of getting yourself out of these like mental stagnations through action. And it doesn't even need to be all these action. groundbreaking things. It's just go act. How important was your faith through all that, those challenging times of getting through that depression? Because I imagine you saw some dark days there.
Yeah, man. I mean, like I did a lot like there as well. It was like, I'm going to serve, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And that breakthrough was actually a spiritual thing. It was like, it was actually November 3rd of last year. That I made this really stupid mistake and I was like, man, this is so dumb. Like how did I not see this is affecting the way I, you know, I do everything. And it was basically dedicating my life to God. And that ever since then, man, it's like, it's a whole different form of peace that I have that, like the Bible says, it surpasses all understanding. It really, religion is a terrible thing, you know, like it basically causes you to think that you got it figured out and your fellow man doesn't. It causes you to be prideful. It causes you to not have like a real, true, deep relationship with our Creator. It doesn't have you focusing on what pleases Him. What does the Bible say pleases Him? What is it that, how should I react and interact with people? But when you actually focus on that, which is like it's lesson one in anything you do in life. Like I want to be a really good salesman. Well, maybe I should find out what my customers need, right? Like instead of just putting out a product that I don't know, well, this, they're going to love this. How do you know they're going to love it? Same thing when it comes to the spiritual life, you know, like is really, I started to, and a big part of that was in October, about a month before that happened, I started reading the Bible. I said to myself, I'm going to pick up the Bible and read it cover to cover. And I read my Bible from October to March. I finished it. And today, actually, I finished it a second time. Wow. So from October to last year to what, September 9th this year, I've read the Bible twice. I've read two different translations. And like, if anybody, especially if you call yourself a Christian, like, I'll get off my soapbox in a minute, but I just got to say, like, we we go through these motions of religion, right? And not only do we abdicate our personal responsibility to like a pastor, which is dangerous because I don't know if you guys have seen, but pastors are falling left and right. You know, they ain't, you know, and all it does is make the religion of Christianity look bad, but it doesn't really reflect what it means to be a follower of Jesus Christ, you know? But you got to get into the word of God. Like it's literally the Bible is our greatest defense and our greatest weapon at the same time. And I noticed that really helped me understand, like, and it's a blessing, you know, because a lot of the time when we look at things from the outside is like, you know, what does it mean to be obedient to God and to live a life that he wants us to live in? And we think it's like this life of just like, restriction. And we have this weird view of it, but it's the complete opposite. It's a blessing, you know. Deuteronomy 28 says that if you follow what I tell you to do, you'll be blessed in the city. You'll be blessed in the country. You'll be blessed going in. You'll be blessed going out. You'll be the head. You won't be the tail. You'll never borrow money. You'll always lend money. Like your children will be blessed. Your animals will be blessed. And it literally is that way. Like it's not this idea of like complete consumerist abundance that people think where you're going to be driving Porsches, but you'll always have what you need and more, enough to bless other people. And that has been just, I can go on about that forever. Like, in fact, I went through a period this year where I was just completely sick of social media. And I was like, I have nothing to say. All I want to talk about is this stuff, you know? And then I was like, hold up. After like a few months, I was like, this is a cop out. You know, because this is what I do. And like, there's people, lots of people everywhere that don't know how to eat, you know, and they don't, yep. You know, they're relying on faulty information. And so I better get back and I better start going back and I share my training tips again and share. I need to do better at like sharing what I used to do, like studies and recipes and stuff. I'm getting there. But it's just like these journeys that we go on, I like to talk about them, especially because as hard as I try to keep it real, it never looks completely real. I look at this and I look at my feed and it's like, it's beautiful. My life is great. You know, it's like all, and it's like, I didn't mean to do that, you know, but it's just the nature of social media. And for people to see, because then they think it's like, it's unattainable, you know, like you look at it on paper, look at it, beautiful wife, beautiful kids, you know, everything's good, but it's not that way. You know, it's hard. For me, and I have to work at it, you know, like, and I promise you, because I talk, you know, I get together with my friends who are like, they speak at these events and like, we'll stay at an Airbnb or we'll be in a big, you know, house together or something like that. And everybody's like relieved every time because none of us have it figured out. None of us, we're all struggling. And, you know, for every person that you think has it figured out, I promise you, there's several things that they struggle with, you know?
Yeah. And that's why it motivates us to have conversations like this with you long form over a podcast, because it lets you kind of peel back behind like the perfectly curated minute long Instagram video and actually get insight into who you are, because people will look at you and they'll automatically be like, oh, the guy's jacked. He's 250 pounds, great wife, great kids, making money off sponsorships. He's got everything going for him. But you don't actually know what's going on up here. So that's why it's like the more vulnerable you are and we are, even if that just helps affect one person and point them in the right direction, it's such a great thing, man. So dude, we just appreciate everything that you do as a human being. And secondly, just coming on this podcast, because we've both learned a lot from this conversation and, you know, we're just excited to see where our paths go down the road, man.
Likewise, brother. I appreciate you guys having me.
Thanks, Danny.
Appreciate it.